My name is Matt Stanton. We're at the Chattanooga Zoo, and I'm one of the zookeepers here in South America.
Hello, I'm John Rossi. I'm a touring drummer with a passion for animal conservation. When I'm on the road, I spend as much time as possible visiting zoos, aquariums, and conservation organizations. Now, I want to share those places with you. I'll be talking to keepers, vets, conservationists, anyone who can help me in my mission of connecting my people to animals through their people. Join me on my raw safari. Hello, hi, hello, and welcome back to the Raw Safari Podcast. All right, y'all. So I have a couple of announcements at the top of this episode. The first one is just a friendly reminder that I'm still running a contest. You can find it on my socials, where you can win fun prizes such as unique Raw Safari stuffed animals. They're actually just normal stuffed animals with unique Raw Safari shirts, but whatever. Peppermint narwhal animal holiday calendars, and even the very cool Ellie Artisan Studio Penguin sweatshirt that she had up in a contest recently. You can enter this contest by donating to my push to help bring red pandas to the Lehigh Valley Zoo. There's a link up on my socials. But you can also enter for free by leaving ratings and reviews for the podcast anywhere that will allow you to do so. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Facebook. Anywhere. It's easy. It's free. You can copy and paste. You have my permission. And you can get a bunch of entries by doing that. Just remember that if you do that, you have to send me proof, just like a little picture of you having started or whatever, because otherwise I can't see who it was. But yeah, you can enter totally for free and win really cool stuff. So don't forget about that contest. It's going to be running for a couple of more weeks here. Now, one other very important announcement. This is going to be the last interview episode of the year. Kind of. Okay. So as I always do, I will not be taking any weeks off. But today we have this great interview with Matt Stanton from the Chattanooga Zoo. And then after that, the next week is going to be my first ever holiday special. It's all original content. There is going to be some interview stuff going on. We actually have a ton of guests, many of whom are your favorite people that have been on the podcast. It's going to be a really fun time. I'm not going to say anything else about it, but I have been working my butt off on it, and it's going to be so much fun. And then the last week of the year, I'm going to do my annual thing where I just play some clips from the different patron exclusive audios that I've had throughout the year to give you a taste of what you might be missing if you are not on my Patreon. So yeah, that's how we're going to end the year as far as the Tuesday episodes are concerned. And I will still be doing zoo news every week, although don't be surprised if they're a little bit lighter, especially towards the end of the year, as I am going to be focusing on my time with my family and doing all of that stuff. So there will still be zoo news, but it will be, you know, maybe a little light. Who knows? I may want to run away from everybody in my family and you might end up getting a 2-hour episode. Hard to say what's going to happen, but that is the plan. And so that brings us to today's episode. I have known Matt Stanton for a while now. And specifically, I've known him as the anteater guy at the Chattanooga Zoo, or as I like to call it, the Chattazooga. When I went to the Chattanooga Zoo for the first time, I met Matt kind of towards the end of the day, and I had already done my interviews and I had all kinds of stuff worked out. And Matt was like, hey, I would like to talk to you about our giant anteaters here. We have an anteater that I absolutely love, and I would like to share all of that information with you and your listeners. And my options at that time were go and finish my red panda interview and meet the red pandas, or wander off with Matt to try and get a little additional content. And listeners, baby podcaster John chose to go and do the red panda stuff. I'm not going to lie. I felt really bad about it, and I really was torn making the decision, surprisingly. But I wanted to finish that episode and get that content and meet those pandas. I'm not going to lie. And so I made my choice. And Matt and I have stayed in touch since then. And that was back, I believe, in the first season. So we're talking a couple of years. And every once in a while, Matt would pop into my DMs and be like, hey, I'd still love to have you come down and meet my anteater friends and talk to you. And we talked about doing a digital episode. We got close a couple of times, but there was always the vibe that we wanted to hang out with the anteaters together. And I figure, hey, I get all around the country, so eventually I'll be back. Now, my gigs have not taken me anywhere near Chattanooga recently, but as you may remember, I went to the AAZV conference earlier this year, which was in Nashville, Tennessee. Which is not really close to Chattanooga, but like, it was kind of close. And the truth is, at first, I didn't even think about that closeness. But when I was at the AZA conference the week before AAZV, there was a company there giving away free stuffed animals that you could like stuff yourself. I've talked about this on the podcast. You heard Sarah Lynn Bowser be very jealous of the fact that I got an anteater. And that's the point here, y'all. I got an anteater. And as I was cuddling with that anteater, I was like, oh man, I still need to do that interview with Matt. And then I was like, wait, I'm going to be in Nashville next week. And then I've got some time as I'm driving home. Maybe I should just shoot over to Chattanooga and do my interview with Matt. And so that's what I did. So y'all have the persistence of Matt Stanton and also a stuffed giant anteater to thank for this interview. And speaking of this interview, what we decided to do was do our normal sit down interview stuff and talk about all the other animals, go all the way through the end, and then go out to the anteaters and talk about them. So you're going to hear the stuff you normally hear at the end of the interview, kind of in the middle, and then you're going to hear us talking about anteaters at the anteater barn with anteaters snuffling along and maybe some other noises you'll hear from another animal or so. It really makes sense because of what we talked about in the interview. It works out really well. But yeah, don't be surprised when you kind of hear things wrap up and then start up again. So without further ado, here is my interview with Matt Stanton of the Chattanooga Zoo. Or, you know, Chattazooga. All right. Very cool. And to be clear, you mean you're in a South American section. We're not in South America.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're definitely not in South America.
No, although we are in Southern America. So yes. there is that. Yeah.
We're in the South.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. I drove here today from Nashville, and Nashville is in Tennessee, and Chattanooga is in Tennessee. And suddenly I was in Georgia. And yeah. I don't know if it was just the fastest highway or what, but I was like, this is confusing to me.
Yeah. No, some of the roads be like just a small little section that cuts across another state just to get in back into the same state. So that's just how the roads are.
Yeah, really weird. But I was just like, okay, I trust my GPS, but I did do a moment of like, we're going to the right place, right?
I mean, if you didn't have GPS and we just had maps, you'd probably be a lot more confused.
No doubt. All right, so you are a zookeeper here in South America. And I'm curious just kind of about your early life, your early career. Did you know that you liked animals from an early age? Did you always want to be a zookeeper? What got you to where you are now?
No, I definitely didn't want to work with animals for the longest time. Not sure what I wanted to do. But a long time ago when I was a small child, I this traveling zoo came to our school or something like that. And I really loved all the goats and all the little animals and stuff. And I think it kind of started there. And then I moved into, watching all the animal shows and, you know, really interested in all the different things I can learn from. Animal Planet was my favorite place to watch. And Steve Irwin was my idol. R.I.P. Steve.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
I miss that guy so much. But he kind of was my inspiration, honestly, and I wanted to be just like him. And eventually when I got out of high school, went to college, I have a bachelor's in veterinary science and a minor in wildlife management. So from there, I did an internship my junior year at Knoxville Zoo. And from there, they also hired me part-time as an attendant at the petting zoo area. And from then, I never left the zoo, Knoxville Zoo, for many years. I was there ever since. When I graduated from college, I worked at Petco, I took care of the animals there. I was the aquatic specialist there, but I was still trying to get my first keeper job, which is actually pretty difficult to do, trying to get a keeper job nowadays. But I was able to get my foot in the door, really friendly with a lot of people, knew some connections, and my first keeper job was working with the elephants at Knoxville Zoo. And I was there for a few years, worked with some carnivores, the camel rides there, and the petting zoo area. So I got a lot of experience with all kinds of animals. And then eventually I ended up in Chattanooga here at the zoo, and now I work with South American animals. So that's where I'm at now.
All right. Very cool. And I am a big fan of Zoo Knoxville. I've had them on multiple times. Very cool crew there.
Love Knoxville Zoo, yes. Honestly.
I'm thinking of going there tomorrow. I kind of have a day to kill between different interviews that I have going on, and I think I might just shoot up there tonight and just whatever.
I don't know when the last time you were there, but their new reptile building,
it is amazing.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
It was so good. I got to go visit. And just visiting one day, I think I was actually dropping off a monkey for one of our tamarins to that zoo. And I have a lot of friends there still. And they're like, you want to see it? And I was like, fucking right, I do. So they gave me a helmet and a vest and everything because they're still building it. So
oh,
I got
wow.
to see how everything was being built. I got to see all the behind the scenes stuff, the pumps, the water, how everything was going to go. And it was stupendous. And I was finally able to go back when it was all done. I was just like, this is so good.
Kind of
jealous I'm not here anymore.
No, I get that. Yeah.
A little
bit. I did an interview. I don't know if you know Phil.
Phil Kloff.
Yeah, he's amazing. He was on the pod, and he's now moved on from reptile curator and is like higher up at the zoo there. But we mostly just talked about herps and the new herp center because he was excited and I was excited. And
I have his contact information. Every time I go up there, I always contact him like, hey, man. You hooked me up with some tickets and stuff. He's like, absolutely. I got
nice.
You. I'm like, yes.
Nice. Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. So you mentioned that you worked with the elephants there.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? Like, that's a heck of a species.
It's a heck of a species to be your first animal you work with.
Yeah.
Like, it was, I was in my low 20s when we started that. Me and another girl named Becca. She was great. And we were pretty much had a end up taking care of the elephants. Some other stuff happened. We don't need to go into details. But we were pretty much doing elephants and we were both really new to it. And I'm not gonna lie to you, when I was a kid, when I was telling you about watching all those TV shows, so I usually skipped over the elephants. I was not a fan just because in my brain they were just big, large animals that walked around and they ate. That's all they did. And I didn't really care much. I was like, there's nothing fascinating about these things. I like every other animal but them. But I needed to get a keeper job. So they offered it to me. I was like, absolutely, I'll take it. And to this day, if Chattanooga Zoo ever got elephants, I would leave South America and I would go work with the elephants.
Wow. And that's extra saying something because we haven't talked about this on here yet. But I know that there is a species that you particularly love that you work with, which
there
we
are is
gonna
yeah.
talk to. Yeah. But so wow, what is it about elephants?
I think it's just they are a lot more intelligent than I anticipated. They have the same brain mentality as a dolphin. Very, very smart, very social. They crave attention. They will do ridiculous things to get said attention. we never really got through many lunches straight out when I first started because they would force a poop out, so then they would throw it against the wall or something so that we would come out and clean it. So that's a thing. That was a lot of fun. But my favorite elephant out of the three, we had Edie, Jana, and Tonka. And Edie was my favorite. And she was the sweetest elephant ever. And we would be cleaning and stuff, and she'd always come over to me and she'd always stick her trunk out like she wanted something. I always kept a whole bunch of Starburst in my pocket.
Oh, okay.
And, she really enjoyed Starburst, so I'd give her a Starburst while I was scrubbing the floors and stuff. She'd eat it, her eyes would close, and me and her just kind of bonded really, really hard bond there. And then when I left the zoo, one of my last days with her, I had a bunch of peeps from Easter, and I would just give her a bunch of peeps, and all her nose hairs were pink and everything. She loved every second of it, and you could tell just by looking at their eyes that they really care about things, or they really have serious feelings about things. And it was just, I don't know, you build a connection with them like you would a person.
So. Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense to me. That's very cool. I know you've seen the video of me playing a drum with Emily the Elephant up at Buttonwood Park, but like I think about her like regularly, just in my day-to-day. I spent one day with her, but it was such an amazing experience. And as much as I've met, gosh, dozens and dozens of species at this point, that was the only time that I can ever say that I was truly speechless afterwards. I know I told this story on another podcast recently, actually, that I was a guest on, but you know, I'm very focused on my podcast and I will do almost anything for it, including drive here and after a conference. And, you know, I will do a lot. I was given another opportunity to do another interview at Buttonwood Park with a person who'd been there forever, high up at the facility. It was going to be a whole nother episode, right? This is great for me. And I was walked to her office after doing that. And I walked in and she was like, so do you want to ask me some questions and have a seat? And I was like, no. I can't. I literally can't even process that you're like a human right now. Like the thing that just happened to me, it might be the most important thing that ever happened to me. Because it was just, and you know, elephants are not near my favorite species list as far as like cute cuddlies, the things that I like. We all know I love my red pandas and stuff.
Right.
But that moment, I have goosebumps now talking about it again.
No, there's a lot more to them than we anticipate there being. And yeah, no, they're amazing. I love them so much now.
That's awesome. That's so cool. I love it when an animal makes you love it, if that makes sense. You know what
100%.
I mean? Yeah. It's really cool. Really cool. Awesome. Well, you know, that's not the zoo we're at now. So tell me about Chattanooga. What was it like transitioning from Knoxville to Chatt?
Other than a little drive, It was interesting to me that when I came over here, I started off as a swing keeper over here, but when I took over Area 5, which is South America, it seemed like the most dangerous animal here was the macaw, which is interesting to me after coming from, you know, tigers and lions and baboons and elephants. And I'm like, really? Like the most dangerous thing we got here is macaws? And, you know, obviously we don't have any elephants here, any rhinos or hippos. We don't have the space for that.
Right.
So a lot of other fantastic animals, just not a lot of the big, big ones. So to my brain, I took that as a bit of a challenge. So in the position, they made the position for Area 5 available, and I was like, dangerous animals are kind of my game. That's kind of like what I want to do. And I was like, if the most dangerous thing we got here is macaws, I will take that challenge. So I applied for that position when it was available, when I was a swing already here, and nobody really fought me on it. Nobody really wanted to hang out with the macaws. And now I have a nickname around here as the bird guy.
Nice.
So right. that was a thing.
Okay.
So that was interesting.
That is interesting. That's really interesting. And so you're in South America is your section. So what animals are you working with there?
Aside from the macaws, I work with the tamarins and marmosets that are over there. I work with a large snake, the kinkajous, and giant anteaters. Mostly.
Yeah. And I know you are a huge fan of your giant anteaters.
They stole my heart. Yeah. I love them so much.
That's awesome. So I think what I want to do, in part just because on my podcast, I love being a jerk and waiting to talk about the cool stuff to the end. But also, I kind of want to, I know we were talking about maybe going and seeing the anteaters. So let's talk about them there. Let's go hang out with some anteaters a little bit later. But let's talk about some of what else you're working with right now. So you just listed a whole bunch of animals. So tell me, let's start more with the macaws. What type of macaws do you have and how many and what are personalities like? All that stuff.
Absolutely. So the two macaws we have on exhibit are Red and Ralph. Red is a scarlet macaw, and Ralph is a blue and yellow macaw.
Okay.
They are a breeding pair. Macaws are monogamous breeders. If you don't know what that is, basically it means that they stay together for life, like human beings or swans or something.
I don't know about the human beings part, but I hear you.
That's the idea behind it, at least. There's no paperwork involved with macaws. But unlike swans, though, like if a swan passes away, a lot of times the other swan will also pass away or never breed again.
I did not know that, actually. That's really interesting.
Yeah, so it's a really weird situation about swans, probably why you don't see very many of them. But macaws, if it's early enough, they will find another suitor and then they would try to be with them forever as well. So those two are on exhibit. Red and Ralph are both came from other homes. They were given to the zoo many years ago. And unfortunately, both of them have crooked beaks.
Okay.
So that is an interesting, unique thing about them personally. And that was because they weren't given the right nutrition. They weren't being taken care of properly. So unfortunately, they have deformities on their beak. So I have to watch and pay attention to what kind of enrichment food that I can give them. Now, normally, a macaw in the wild eats, they eat Brazil nuts. I don't know if you know a lot about Brazil nuts, but Brazil nut is one of the hardest nuts in the world to crack. It's got the same consistency as human bone.
Wow.
So technically, a macaw would be able to take your finger off at the knuckle.
I was going to say, as soon as you said that, I was like, okay, and now I see why they were the most dangerous animals.
Yes, yeah. That's the big reason why everybody's like, I don't want to work with macaws.
Wow, okay.
So they do have crooked beaks, so I have to watch what I give them. But other than that, they are great birds to train with. I take them out for walks all the time. They're usually the first two birds that I have people train in if they want to train with birds, just so I'm not the only one who can walk them around in case of an emergency or we're having an event. The other two birds I have, they're actually in the back off exhibit. That's Calypso and Elvis. Calypso is my favorite. I don't tell the other birds that, but she is my favorite. She came from a great home. Unfortunately, they were moving, though I couldn't take her with them. But she would go to baseball games. She would go everywhere, you know, and she would just be, you know, she'd walk around on their floor and play with her dog and dog toys. It was a whole thing. And she's very, very great bird. She used to be on exhibit with Red and Ralph, but macaws are very social animals. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, she didn't have anybody out there for herself. She bonded to me very quickly, and me and her have been tight ever since.
Okay.
And I love that bird to death. But unfortunately, I can't be out there 24/7.
Right, right.
So she would start doing some behaviors that were not necessarily smiled upon. She started picking her feet pretty good and stuff because she was anxiety and everything. So we had another bird in the back. His name's Elvis. He is the bane of most people's existence here at the zoo. And he's been by himself, and I took it upon myself to try to change that.
Okay.
And for a long time, we did really, really well. He bonded with me, and I was actually able to take him out, which was pretty much unheard of at the wow. for a long time, and took him out for walks and everything. But he was also by himself. So we decided to try putting them together. Apparently they used to be together a long time ago, but now they weren't. But we're like, what if we put them together? That would help her anxiety, and she won't be so dependent on me being in there all the time.
Right.
And he would have companionship, because, again, very social birds. So we did that. And I didn't specify, but Elvis is a Harley Quinn macaw.
Okay.
So he is a man-made hybrid bird.
Okay.
So you won't find the Harley Quinns in the wild.
I was just going to say, I don't think I've ever seen one of those, or at least never heard the name.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a man-made bird. Honestly, in my opinion, he's probably one of the most beautiful birds we have here.
Oh,
over
wow.
all the other macaws, he has the most beautiful feathers. His feathers have multiple colors on them instead of just like one.
Ooh, okay.
He is very, very pretty, but he hates people and he hates birds. But he craves attention.
Oh, no.
So,
from what?
Yeah. And then
did you take him to visit the red pandas once a day?
I mean, sometimes I would go over there with him when he's by himself, but that's one of those things I couldn't I had to look past that and try to figure out how to work with him.
Right.
And we did, but then once we got him to Calypso together, they did really well right off
nice.
The bat. And since then, he's not really wanted to have anything to do with me. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but they're in the back. They're off exhibit.
Right.
So if anybody gets to see them, it usually be for an event or a behind-the-scenes tour or something.
Wow. Okay, that's really cool. And so are all four of them then surrenders? Because I know you mentioned
yes.
three. I assume Elvis
yep.
was as well.
Also.
Okay, cool, cool, cool. So good moment for a message here. Maybe citizens aren't the best pet idea unless you're really well-trained for it.
I could go on for about 4 hours straight on why not to have macaws a pet. I won't take 4 hours of your time.
Thank you.
But I will say just a couple of things really fast on that is they're very loud. They can cause vertigo in your ears. They are expensive. Just to get one itself is going to be very expensive, and you have to have one, if not multiple cages. They need constant attention. You can't leave the house without someone taking care of them. Them being monogamous, a lot of people think that they just are aggressive birds. In reality, they're not. They just get attached to a specific individual and then they protect that individual with their life.
Gotcha.
So they're not just terrible birds in general. That's just how they are in the wild as well. Mm-hmm. But when you're looking at the money, you're looking at the care, and a lot of people think that you just give them bird seed, and that's not the case. They have to have fresh fruits and vegetables every single day, plus a dry macaw diet to get the rest of the proteins and stuff that they need. Aside from the vet visits for the feathers, if you don't want them to fly, the beak trims, the foot care, you have to have, there's a whole plethora of things of why not to have one of these. And our four birds are prime examples of why not to, because we have two with deformities now, and the other one's very antisocial. And it's, you know, we don't obviously take any more in, but people usually will just get rid of them, let them go or something like that. And it's either way, they're not going to make it. So,
yeah, it's interesting to me that 3/4 of yours are like failure stories. And I don't mean the birds, I mean the humans
right.
who didn't do it right. Obviously exactly. Not the bird's fault, even Elvis's, even if he's antisocial. But the fourth one was a success story as far as it sounds like it was well written. But they still had to get rid of it because they have a long life expectancy. Moving with them is hard. You know, I mean, you're talking, what, decades of life, right?
Yes. Well, that's why they got rid of her, or they knew somebody here, as far as I know, and they were moving mm-hmm. and they couldn't take her. But the unfortunate thing is they were moving, they couldn't take her with them, but they actually end up moving back, and they do come to the zoo multiple times a year just to check on her and see how she's doing, because okay. they do really care about her. They just...
That's cute. It's still a bad choice to get
yes.
the bird, but the fact that they remain invested in some way, I'll give them that.
They get
cute.
Some points for
yeah,
that. I've met
points.
Them, very nice people.
Right.
It's very rare to have those kind of people who still come and check on a bird, and not sure if they're going to show up for the next 60 years. To check on the bird. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to be here for
right,
60
yeah.
years, but they do periodically come, and they also come for events and stuff, and I always ask about her, and I was more than happy to take them back and let them see her. So
that's adorable. I do. Again, no pets. No, this is a bad idea. However, I give them some props. That's
yes,
pretty cool.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. All right, cool. So, you know, before we move on to other animals, you seem to be pretty training focused.
Yeah.
And I know that some keepers are, I mean, everybody has to do a lot of training, but some seem very inspired by it and some it just seems to be part of the job. But given the fact that you are taking on these challenges and having these successes, tell me a little bit about your background in training.
Well, like I said, when I worked at Knoxville Zoo, I learned very early on that you need to have your focus on animals needs to be more than just being able to work with them. A lot of people apply for the job and they just want to be around animals, assuming we just pet them and play with them all day and such. But my focus has come to training, and that's what actually helped get me the job there, was because I was very interested in what all could be done. And my training that I like to focus on is not as much fun-based as it is vet-based. So our goal at the zoo is to make sure that we try to keep the animals as natural as possible and let them allow us to work with them so that we can do things with them, to them, for them, and then be okay with it rather than stress them out.
Right.
So my focus on training is basically started with the elephants and it worked from there. I started with the elephants would give us their ear to take blood or to clean their feet or something. And then from there, when it came to macaws, because we couldn't work with them, instead of training them to say more words or sounds or anything like fun, my birds, almost all of them now are trained to present their feet to me so that I can see if there's any sores, anything wrong. One of the biggest problems when it comes to birds is bumblefoot. And luckily, ours don't usually get that. They have a lot of different size perching. They go all over the place. Not a big deal. But if there was a case, like when Calypso, as I was talking to you earlier, Calypso would bite her feet.
Right.
And she was actually the first one I was teaching, trying to help train her to present her feet. So she would present her foot, and I'd say, wow, it's a really red foot. Tell the vet staff I get some SSD cream. And she would allow me to apply this cream to her feet so that it would heal her feet. For her. I didn't have to get a towel. I didn't have to get gloves. I didn't have to catch her. I didn't have to force her to do anything. She allowed me to help her. And that's what a lot of my focus has been on with a lot of my animals, is rather than stress them out and force them to do something for the betterment of their lives, we're allowing them to decide to work with us.
Right.
And they're, and with them allowing us, their lives are better. So a lot of my training is most focused on vet care that I can do myself.
Cool. That makes a lot of sense to me. I'm curious, are there any training references that you use or any resources that you're a big fan of, or do you just kind of go out and figure it out?
I'm more of a figure it out kind of guy. I have about 11 to 12 years experience in the zoo field. So I learn from everyone else I work with. Mm-hmm. Everybody has their own styles of doing things. And most keepers are on the same page as I am when it comes to training nowadays. So I will watch other people train other animals, whether or not it's even the same species or anything that I'm working with. But it gives me ideas and gives me incentive to try to figure out some other way to make things work that's easier for us. And honestly, a lot of mine is just experience, trial and error kind of deal.
Yeah, makes sense. And I mean, I think training is fairly universal, especially if you're talking positive reinforcement and stuff. You know, I've taken quite a shine to training since I started this podcast. I'm very interested in it, especially the theory of it, since I don't actually work with animals. I don't get to, I mean, I have dogs and I get to work with them. But even with people in my life, I have found that if I apply basic training stuff, it can really have a positive impact on the relationship.
Absolutely. So
it's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah.
I dig it. Very cool. So tell me about some more of the animals that you take care of.
Some other animals I take care of that not a lot of people get to see are the Kinkajous.
Kinkajous are amazing.
Adorable.
So cute.
So cute. I love them so much. And we have four on grounds. I take care of three of them.
Was the fourth one an ambassador or why?
It used to be.
Okay,
She's retired now with those animals. Honestly, all our Kinkajous are pretty much retired at this point. they're all pretty old. But because they sleep all day, not a lot of people get to see them. Mm-hmm. With that being said, I have three that I take care of. Two of the females, Cosmo and Cola. They live together in an enclosure that I helped create and design. And then Kokomo, he's our old man, and he lives by himself, his own bachelor pad right across the street there. He is 34 years old.
Whoa, okay.
Yep. According to the AZA records on file right now, he is the second oldest in captivity, if I remember right. I think there's one that's 35.
Okay.
But Kokomo steals a lot of people's hearts. He has to take medicine every single day. He's got some GI issues that we don't really know what's going on with him, but we're going to give him some things that were recommended by Dr. Ashley, our zoo vet here.
An amazing vet. We actually just hung out at the AZV conference.
Yeah, he's very cool guy. He's fantastic. And he's actually one of the things he's specializing in right now is trying to figure out the issues with the Kinkajous and them with anteaters as well. He's very passionate about them. So Kokomo's on some medicine. He's missing a couple teeth. He actually doesn't have any front appendages. He's got no fingers or claws on his front feet. Many years ago, he got in a fight with the lady, Kinkajous, and he lost. so they had to amputate what's left of them. So that's one of the bigger reasons why he is by himself. And I helped design his enclosure as well, so it's a little bit easier for him to get around. But luckily, Kinkajous have prehensile tails, which means a fifth arm. And so he uses his tail a lot more than the girls have to, obviously. But he gets around just fine. He's fantastic. And I do training with them as well, a lot of tactile training, which is basically like touching. And so when the vets come and they need to check things, they can touch them as well, do what they need to do, and the animals are okay with it. And then the two girls, Cola has one ear. She also got in a fight a long time ago with another female Kinkajou. So she's only got one ear. But I also work with them as well for touching and a few other things. And I think pretty soon we're probably going to start working on injection training with them as well. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Are Kinkajous violent normally? Is it like, that's really interesting to me. I don't know much about them. I've met one or two in my day and they did not attack me. So I'm feeling pretty lucky right now.
Yeah, no, they, I probably kind of made them sound like they're a little vicious.
You told the true story and I'm just curious if that was situation, not like because of the zoo, but just the Kinkajous you had, or if that's just what the species is.
I think it depends on the scenario. So in the wild, when it comes to Kinkajous, normally they are solitary. They come out at night. They forage for food. You can find multiple Kinkajous in one single tree if there's enough food to go around. They get along. But if it's a smaller territorial kind of deal, and I don't know what happened a long time ago. I wasn't here for it. But something ticked somebody off and you know, they get into it. But I mean, animals like kinkajous, dogs, human beings, when you start getting in a little scrap, things can get out of hand a little bit and you kind of lose yourself. And my opinion is probably what happened. They just kind of got caught in the moment, and then it went from fun to aggressive, and you know, things happened. But in general, their normal demeanor, I personally, from my experience, have not had a single issue with them. They're very cordial with me, and we all get along.
So. Now let me check here. 1, 2, 3. Yeah, we got 10. 10, yep. 10 fingers.
All my digits are here, yep. So we are good.
Now, that's really cool. That's really cool. Yeah, just keep rolling with a couple more of maybe the more interesting animals, and then we'll pop on out.
Okay. So another animal I take care of is a red-tailed boa. She used to be an ambassador animal, but she's not anymore. She's in her double digits now.
Oh, wow.
So okay. For a large snake, it's about that time to just kind of let her live out the rest of her life in a happy way. So we don't really handle her very much. I do very minimal work in there, unless obviously if I need to pick up poop or feed her something or spray in there for humidity. I really don't do much with her. I just kind of let her live her life. The only times I really take her out is if we need to get a weight on her, which I'll try to do every couple of months, or if I need to do some work, actual serious work with perching or, you know, redo the mulch or something, I need her out. But otherwise, she just kind of lives her best life. When it comes to the monkeys, the tamarins and marmosets, we've had some really good things happen, some bad things happen. Obviously, every animal lives forever. So we have lost a couple of those in the last couple of years. But we've also had some really good success with pied tamarins.
Yes.
The pied tamarins are considered one of the most, if not the most, endangered species of monkey in the world. And we had babies almost 2 years ago, about a year and a half or so. And we named them Crash and Eddie.
Nice.
We had a little vote for the zoo. Let the guests vote on what they wanted to do. And the money for the voting went right to the care for those animals. And Crash and Eddie won the vote, which I was pretty excited about. It's from Ice Age, in case anybody
knows
that.
Yes, yes, yes. That's amazing. So, yeah.
We were really excited about that. So we had those babies. I think also the last couple of years, I don't know when the last time you were here, but we've had two golden lion tamarin babies.
Okay.
Yeah. Since I've been here as well. And those are also very rare animals. So
yeah, they are. I know. Success. I love, I just got here and we started talking immediately. I'm assuming it's still this way, but that you have the New World Monkeys building.
Yes.
Is that still the thing? Cause that was the focus of one of the episodes I did back then. And I just remember being in that room where you could just see into all of the exhibits, like, cause it's the keeper area.
Yes.
And it was one of the coolest places I have ever been.
Well,
they're just amazing.
Every monkey's super curious, mm-hmm. and they want to know what's going on. They're really curious animals, and they always like to go up to the window and see what's going on, especially, like I said, if there's a new person or something else crazy in there, they're very curious. They might get treats, they don't know. So they're always right there on the window, so you can see pretty much every type of monkey we have all staring at you like while you're doing dishes or something. So not everybody gets the opportunity while they're doing dishes. So that's a fun building to be in as well.
Yeah, very cool. Are there any others that you want to hit before we go finish up here and then go take our walk?
I'm not sure if you want to hit anteaters now or if
you... Nah, we're going to talk about them out there. Yeah, I want to have some sniffling happening when we're talking anteaters.
No, 100%.
Yeah.
The other ones, the only things I help take care of as well are the invertebrates.
Okay.
So the woman here, her name's Kate Warner, and she helps take care of the monkeys with me and the scorpions and the tarantulas, anything like that. She loves her invertebrates. If there's anybody that knows more about bugs, please let me know, because I don't know if there is. But I do help with the tarantulas and all those other animals. Currently, we have one of the largest spiders in the world on exhibit,
okay.
The Goliath bird eater spider.
Yes, yes, yes.
And as of right now, a lot of people say that is the largest tarantula or largest spider in the world. A female can get up to about the size of a dinner plate. The one we have right now is not that big just yet, but hopefully one day she'll be that big and that'd be pretty amazing.
That would be.
Other than that, those are the animals that I take care of.
That's really cool. Do you like having such variety in the taxa that you take care of?
I love having the variety. A lot of other departments don't have as much variety.
Right.
I literally have bugs, reptiles, birds, mammals. I have a little bit of everything. And honestly, I wouldn't change any of that. for one of these other departments. A lot of great departments, honestly. As a swing keeper, I worked in multiple departments, and I know how to take care of a lot of these animals. Probably half the zoo I can take care of.
Right.
But I like my variety and my assortment as of right now. So,
love it. Very cool. All right. So before we go out and spend some time with some animals, I have two more questions for you.
Okay.
First of all, conservation organization you want to give a shout out to?
Yes, Anteaters and Highways is what Chattanooga Zoo currently works with. We have anteater encounters that we've just started doing recently.
Ooh.
And so a portion of that money and part of our other money that we make here at the zoo goes toward Anteaters and Highways. And what they do is a lot of roads are being built down in South America. And one of the things about anteaters, they travel on the same path to find all their food, so the same way. So as roads get put into their pathway, a lot of anteaters are actually getting hit by cars, kind of like the deer here in North America. So Anteaters and Highways are working on getting signs and everything else put up so people can watch for anteaters, as well as they also do collars for the animals as well for tracking and everything else, so that we help with that as well. So I wanted to shout out to them.
Very cool. I love that. Not the whole anteaters dying thing, but the conservation thing.
Absolutely,
it's very good.
Yeah.
And then it is time.
It's time now, don't you know? We've come to the end of the show. But there's one tale left to go. You're gonna laugh and say, oh no. It's time for the Rastafari poop story.
All right, so one of the weird stories I have to say about the giant anteaters is me and Betsy are pretty close. Betsy's our female. I've worked with her since she's gotten here. So she's 6 years old, and I've worked with her for 5 years.
All right.
And so one of the things that she really enjoys are watches. And I think it's just because it smells funny. I really don't know. I got a lot of smells on my watch.
Yeah,
work
sure.
At a zoo. It's going to be stinky.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's very interested. And one winter, I was doing some tactile training with her, just touching her nose and her face and hands and everything, just trying to get her used to being touched and stuff. And it was colder, so I had a long sleeve shirt on. And she was really interested in my watch. And I've never seen this behavior before. I was just like, I smell my watch, see what happens. And she was able to get her nose and her mouth underneath my watch. And her tongue went all the way to my armpit, and she tickled my armpit with her tongue and pulled it back out. And I immediately pulled away, and I was like, okay, well, that's enough of that. We won't be doing that anymore anytime soon. So that happened.
You were tickled by an anteater.
I was tickled by it. And I want to tell you, I don't regret that happening, because I can say that happened to me.
Yep.
Do I want it to happen again? Absolutely not. No, that was a really weird sensation. I honestly told him, I was like, you could have taken us to dinner first. You know, like, going right to there. So
amazing. Awesome story. And thank you for taking the time. Let's go hang out some animals.
Let's do it.
All right. So where are we?
We are officially in the anteater building. This building is brand new. It's only about 6 years old.
Okay.
So usually a lot of people come in here once it's clean. It smells like fresh wood, which is nice. And here, this is Pico. He's our newest resident. He's a male. He came from Zoo Miami.
Okay.
He is a proven breeder, and we are trying to breed our anteaters. So he has already fathered a baby anteater before.
Nice, nice.
So that's him in stall two.
He's very handsome.
He's a good boy. He's actually a very active anteater. A lot of anteaters like to sleep during the day in a lot of facilities. So you'll notice in a lot of anteater facilities will have anteaters in with other animals, all the way from howler monkeys to Maine wolf, tapirs, stuff like that. But this guy, he's super active. He gets up in the morning when I turn the lights on, and he doesn't go to bed until we leave.
Okay.
So he's constantly out. So if Betsy, you decide to take a nap, we still got this guy out there. And people really enjoy coming to see the anteaters here.
Yeah, they're such amazing animals. And while we're sitting here, you know, for people that have maybe never gotten up close with an anteater, obviously we're talking about the giant anteaters, different than tamandos, which we've talked about on here before.
Yeah.
One of the most interesting things about them, other than all their face stuff, which we'll talk about in a minute, is how they walk. Can you talk about that front leg situation?
Yeah, so giant anteaters walk on their knuckles. There's multiple reasons for that. One of those reasons is they need those claws to get into termite mounds, anthills, and they also use it to defend themselves. So some termite mounds can get as solid as concrete.
Oh, wow.
And anteaters are able to pick a hole through that concrete wall just big enough for their face so they can get the food out of it. But they also use those claws for defense as well. That's their main weapon when they're confronted with a predator. Predators for these guys usually consist of cougars and jaguars.
Okay.
And they will fight them off with those claws. And over all the years that jaguars and anteaters have seen each other and been around each other, it's been engraved in jaguars' brains to not really mess with a giant anteater because of those claws.
Okay.
There are less than 5% of a jaguar's diet consists of anteaters because it's just not worth the fight.
Right.
So, yeah. So those claws, they walk on their knuckles, and so they never get worn down. Most animals walk flat-footed. The nails get worn down on their own. Giant anteaters don't walk flat-footed, so those nails never get worn down. So you're looking at about 4-3-inch long claws on their front feet that
That's
never
amazing.
Get worn down. Yep.
That's absolutely amazing. Oh,
there's
and
Betsy.
Someone else is coming in.
That's
this is Betsy.
She's my girl.
Yeah, there's your favorite.
She is my favorite. Now, Betsy is about, last time I weighed her, about 144 pounds.
Okay.
And Pico, he only weighs about 104, 105 pounds. On average, you're looking at between 80 and 100. So he's actually good. She is a little bit on the healthier side, but she's not considered obese at this point.
Okay.
But she is on the larger side. But her dad was very large anyway, so it's not uncommon for some anteaters to be a little bit bigger. So
that's cool. And what is it about her personality that makes you love her so much?
Other than the tongue and the armpit thing that's really, you know,
I mean, that's
glued us
one.
Together.
That's a really good one.
Yeah. Other than that, she has a specific schedule that she has to, that I abide by her rules. She's also very picky. So one of the things that she is about her, she doesn't get up till 10.
Okay.
10 a.m. is her time to wake up and get ready for the day.
Same girl.
Other than that, yeah, obviously, we could all do that. It'd be great. But she will refuses to get up no matter what the situation. She will not get up until about 10 o'clock, and that's usually when I'll time my normal days to feed her. So she'll get up at 10. I can't give her den one because she will just go to sleep. So den two is the one area that she doesn't really care to sleep in for some reason, which I take advantage of. Also, one of the fun things about her, it wasn't fun at the time trying to figure it out, but it's fun now. She's a very picky eater. I went through a list of all the different things that other anteaters eat in other facilities, and she just wasn't having most of it. So most anteaters will eat waxworms, mealworms, superworms, crickets, anything like that. She thinks they're icky. She won't eat them. She prefers specific other things like yogurt.
Oh.
She likes yogurt. She doesn't like any yogurt, though, which is a fun fact about Betsy. Betsy doesn't like Yoplait. She doesn't like Greek yogurt. She likes Walmart Great Value brand yogurt. So
my
she
gosh.
Likes a good deal.
Okay. So I like
that's
that.
Cool.
That's cool.
So she likes a good deal. So she does, and she likes strawberry banana, and wild berry yogurt. Any other one she's not really a fan of. So she'll eat those ones. And then her food is actually a very specific food as well. She has canned cat food that is put in with her diet. But she has to have specific canned cat food in her diet. She can't have a lot of the basic ones that you'll find at pet stores. She has to have a specific one. And there's three specific ones we could use with her, and we tried all of them. And she picked the one that was the hardest to find and the most expensive to find. It was the only one she wanted to eat. Everyone else, she refused. So those are some fun things about her. But all of those things make her amazing.
She is really adorable.
She's fantastic. She's really good at training too. Honestly, she does anything I ask her to do. I can do nail trims on her if I really needed to. She'll come up when I ask her to come up. Sometimes she likes her chin scratched. She's got some serious personality going on with her. With Pico's a little bit more timid when it comes to some of those things. Like, he's a very good animal, but you know, he's not going to let his face get touched very much. He's like, why would you do that? Unless you have food. He's a very food-motivated animal. Pico will do anything for avocado.
Gotcha. That's really cool. So I'm curious. I'm noticing they have kind of at the top of them
I'm just going to call it a mohawk.
Yeah.
Like their back kind of goes up and has like normal fur, but then on top, right in the center, going back, is just like an extra tuft of fur. And it looks really coarse. Like it almost looks like porcupine quills, not quite, but almost. And I'm just wondering if we know why that is or
yeah.
You know, what they use that for.
So usually when they get really amped up, if they're scared or excited or something, they're a lot like a dog or a cat. That hair goes up,
okay.
And it makes them look much larger than they really are. So if you happen to be a jaguar and you see an anteater and that hair goes up and everything, it looks even bigger than it was before. It's just one of those things that a lot of animals do. My macaws do it. You know, they fluff up their feathers, make them look bigger. Yeah. The monkeys do it. Everybody. So that's what they do. They just go straight up and looks just like you said, a mohawk. So it just makes them look much larger. And you're right. It is a coarse hair. So if you ever want to know what that hair feels like, you can go home and you can feel the bristles of your broom.
Okay.
That's what you can do.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. That's really interesting. Very, very cool. Is there anything else you wanted to tell me about these goobers?
One of the fun things that I really like to tell people about is what I find that one of the most interesting things are their tails, mm-hmm. and the big black stripe. Usually when I do my keeper chats, I will ask people what they notice the most, and those are the two of the things that they notice, obviously, other than the really long face.
Yeah, yeah.
But their tails have multiple purposes. One of those things is balance. If they want to look bigger for a predator, they'll stand up on their back feet, or another giant anteater in that case, and that tail helps keep them balanced and standing. It also, they use it for a blanket. So the core body temperature of a giant anteater is actually a couple degrees less than a normal mammal's.
Okay.
So when they go to sleep at night, they curl up into a ball and they take their tail and they cover themselves like a blanket, and it keeps them warm at night. Fun fact, squirrels actually do the same thing. So there's that. And I also really like their black stripe on the side of their bodies as well. That actually does serve a really crucial purpose in their lives. A lot of people think it might be for camouflage or something. And in a sense, they are accurate. It is camouflage, but it's not camouflage for the giant anteater itself. It's for the baby giant anteaters. So about 15 minutes after a baby giant anteater is born, it climbs onto mom's back, and it could stay there for up to a year. And so when the baby holds onto mom's back, super flat on mom's back, and the baby's black stripe lines up with mom's black stripe, so, you know, and then the tail lines up with the tail,
right,
and all that
right.
stuff. So to a predator, it looks like just one big giant anteater. And as we talked about before, no jaguar really cares to mess with an anteater. So a baby's best chance of survival is to ride on mom's back and just pretend that she is mom.
Right.
And when it's old enough, it'll, you know, she'll kick the baby off and the baby will go do its own thing. But that is camouflage, but camouflage for the baby. And I think that's fascinating.
That is. I can't so think cool. of any other species that I know of that do that.
I mean, there's other animals that ride on mom's back and stuff, but not as much, in my opinion, as the camouflage effect that giant
right. Yeah,
use.
No, I've never heard of it as a camouflage thing. Yeah, no, that's really, really cool. You guys are awesome, aren't you? Yeah, you are. Hi. Hello.
You hear them sniffing.
Oh, such sniffs.
Yep. Their sense of smell is actually about 40 times stronger than human beings.
Okay.
So they can smell an anthill up to 5 miles away.
Wow. It's a good thing I showered today then, isn't it?
You got a watch?
Yeah, I do. But oh, boy. That's awesome. Very cool. Well, thank you for taking the time to do this. This has been an absolute
blast. Absolutely.
Yeah. Anteaters are awesome.
I love them.
Now we just need to convince the AZA to get some silkies in.
If only. I got to handle some silkies
really
before, and it was magical.
That's really cool. I've met more than a few tamanduas and some giants, but silkies would be amazing.
I love them.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so there you have it, folks. I had such a good time hanging out with Matt, and I don't know if y'all noticed this, but man, as great as that first part of the interview was, and as much interesting stuff as he had to say, he just lit up when we were actually hanging out with the anteaters, which, I mean, obviously I get goofy and excited every time I hang out with an animal, so it's not entirely surprising, but I love hearing that passion from a keeper. It's very cool. And I'm so grateful to the Chattanooga Zoo Chattazooga, for having me back again, and I look forward to my next visit. I would like to say thank you to my patrons, all of them, especially the Red Panda level ones, Dr. Laura Shank, Dr. Stephen Williamson, and Barbara Bennett. I'd like to remind you all that you can become a patron of the podcast for as little as $3 a month, which helps me, you know, produce this bad boy and stuff. You can do that by going to patreon.com/rawsafari. Don't forget the contest. Go check out the socials. Go leave ratings and reviews. It helps me. It helps people find the podcast, and it can help you win cool stuff. And last but not least, don't forget, my friends, the word, credits backwards, is Steiderk. The Rossafari podcast is produced, hosted, and engineered by John Rossi. Editing and fact-checking by John and Dr. Zoe Rossi. Our theme song is Sevens by Nathan Burke, performed by Nathan and John. Interrupting John theme and additional voices by Taylor Isaac Gray. You can reach John directly on Instagram and Facebook at Rossafari or by email at rossafaripod@gmail.com. Rossafari is part of the Daydreamer Media Network. Now, stop listening to me and go visit a zoo.